I pray. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Psalm 139:14. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week, oh boy, it's a doozy of a booksy. It's a crazy little tome. It's a wacky adventure into the dangerous world of parts unknown on this show. It's quite possibly the worst Berenstain Bears book ever written, and as is the case with most of the worst art ever produced, it is done with every possible good intention. But what do they say about the road to hell, right? It's paved with them. Good intentions, that is, not children's books about bears. That's right, this week's book is The Berenstain Bears, God Made You Special. It's a Living Lights book. It's a Zonderkids book. It is a faith story. And for those of you who don't usually watch this show, those of you who are jumping in from recent episodes, my history with the Zondervan Living Lights books, first of all, Mike's history with the Zondervan Living Lights books was fraught. It was fraught. He does not publish books with them anymore. They made too many demands. They wanted too many weird things. They tried to tie him into too many strange contracts. And if you want to hear more about it, I have a couple of interviews ago with Mike. We talked all about his history with the Zondervan books. History with the religious books, Mike was the one who kind of prompted his parents to get into publishing in religious publishing. Because in the early 2000s, there wasn't really much of a market that was being fulfilled there. So they decided they were going to write some boutique Berenstain Bears books that will be published in Christian bookstores. Do you remember those things? There used to be this thing called Christian bookstores that only sold religious books. And then at the exact same time, they decided to get into religious publishing. Religious publishing took off. And by religious publishing, I, of course, mean Christian faith publishing. And all of a sudden, these books were available everywhere, in every Barnes & Noble across the United States. And it took them by surprise, but it also became a hugely lucrative source of income. And as you know, Mike is always looking to diversify. And so they were like, fine, we'll have a religious line and we'll have our regular line, which has never changed. The religious line and the secular line have always been separated from each other. Okay, just so you know, Mike was never trying to trick anybody. He didn't fool his parents. He didn't twist their arms into starting this line. It was just something that he was like, let's diversify. Let's try to get a new audience. And so they did. The Berenstain Bears Living Lights books were always just about the bear family. They were pretty much the same stories you would get in regular books, but with a religious angle. Or they would deal directly with religious stories. I've gone on record as saying this quite a few times. I actually really enjoy their Living Light series. For me personally, I am not a religious man. I am a dyed-in-the-wool atheist. I don't have any history of church going. My religious upbringing was slight, to say the least. I get along fine with my own personal lack of belief, and I really, really enjoy Mike's take on religion. I really like the fact that he promotes religion as a form of community togetherness, as a way of promoting good acts. I like the way he walks the talk. I like that he believes that love and faith and generosity and kindness are not attitudes or emotions. They are actions. They are things you have to do to demonstrate that you love. It's not enough to love someone. You have to act on that love. I know I've talked about this a billion times, but I'm doing this to lay my groundwork. I am not coming into this as some kind of adversary or hater. I am not coming into this saying, here's another one of them wacky religious books. As you all know, in the last years, I have adored many of these books. In fact, if I may, His Gifts of the Spirit series, one of my favorite Berenstain Bears series of the last few years. And these are wonderful, by the way, hardback books. So pick them up. These, however, were Random House books. After he left Zondervan, he started publishing these, which are more in line with the exact kind of thing he wanted to publish. So here we are, though, with a book that I've been skipping over for quite a while. Why have I been skipping over this book? Because it makes me incredibly uncomfortable to talk about. I batted around a bunch of guests I thought about having on, and then finally decided I just got to jump in with both feet and talk about this book. I have I can speak from a little bit of authority. I am a writer who works for a nonprofit that is a disability-forward nonprofit. It is a brain injury nonprofit, but I am the writer. I do the writing. I've been doing this job for 18 years now, 17 years, and have learned the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the pitfalls, and the trappings of writing about disability, especially when you are writing about other people who have disabilities, as opposed to telling your own story. I share the stories of people with disability online, and I've made mistakes in the past. I have put my foot in my mouth on several occasions. And also, the one thing I've learned is that the rules to this job, the rules are malleable, and they change, and they evolve, and it never ends. So if someone says, we don't say that anymore, or you're not supposed to refer to people as that anymore, or in that way anymore, and you're like, well, 10 years ago it was fine. Of course, 10 years ago it was fine. And the problem with disability language, the problem with how you refer to a certain thing, is that eventually that language will get co-opted. Eventually that language will be turned into sort of an umbrella term for other things. It gets generalized, ruining its effectiveness, or it gets turned into a slur, or it gets turned into a joke, a pop cultural reference. It gets applied to a fictional character, and it loses its effectiveness. It loses its use, its usability, and then in like 30 years, it's time to reclaim that word. And that's the cycle of language. You can't stop it. It's just how language works. But you do have to keep on the ball. You have to pay attention. You have to listen to the communities to whom you are referring, because they are the ones who are the arbiters of language and of around themselves, and they get to decide how they are referred to. And also, a lot of times there's no complete 100% consensus. Some people will say, please never say that about us. Please never call us that. And some people will say, that's totally fine. We like that term. And then some, you know, it's regional, it's cultural, it's all based on background and experience. And, you know, one person's empowering word is another person's insulting word. So you just got to listen. And if someone says, I don't like being referred to in that way, or I don't think you should call me that or call us that, you listen to them, you say, okay, you nod your head and you move on with your life, because it's not your call to make. Language, it's important. Writing about disability is important. Authors telling stories of people with disabilities is important. Mike and Stan and Jan have included characters in the past with disabilities. Wasn't always handled with grace, and they were frequently held up as examples in weird ways. I'm thinking about, the kid in the wheelchair. The kid who used the wheelchair in the chapter books. I can't even think of his name all of a sudden, because he wasn't used much in later books. In the book The Wheelchair Commando, as much as they used some weird language describing him, the language is dated now. This was back in the 90s. He was a real character. He was a character. Harvey? Harry? I can't think of his name. He was a real character and had his own plots and his own likes and dislikes and his own frustrations and his own. Like, he was a fully realized character who used a wheelchair to get around in, you know, and it wasn't ever portrayed as like a limit for him. It was just, that's how he got around. It helped him get around. It's how he got around the school. And it was like Tootall who made fun of him and stuff, until he like proved to Tootall that you shouldn't make fun of him because he knows how to defend himself. So in any case, we've encountered characters with disabilities in the past. However, the Berenstain Bears, God Made You Special is, we're going to take a look at this book. And we're going to start off with the title, because the title and the cover page are already worrisome. The title is God Made You Special in a big, bold red letters. And we see a cub on the cover we've never encountered before. We see brother and sister and honey holding baseball equipment. And this other cub, sort of with his arms crossed, with his back leaning against Honey Bear, and his name on his shirt. And you know that if a bear in bear country has their name on their shirt, there's something about them. I'm going to stop right there. There's something acknowledgeable about them. Only bears with something about them write their names on their shirts. I'm looking at you, Tuffy the Bully. God Made You Special from 2014. That's right. I've put off covering this book for so long. I can only put off opening the book. Let's just open the book. God made you special. He did. So right off the bat, you're going to notice that I did not start with the opening Bible quote from this book. The opening Bible quote from this book is, Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." That's Matthew 19:14. And it's an interesting quote to begin with because it doesn't have much to do with the book we're talking about. I mean, there are kids in this book, sure. But let the children come to me and do not hinder them. So basically the idea is like, taken out of context, the quote seems to be like, don't get in the way of kids, let kids do their thing, which is sort of the plot of this book in a way, but it's not the theme of this book. And weirdly enough, it also does the job of infantilizing children before you start reading the book you're reading. It also has a picture of Jesus with a bunch of cubs, which is wild because Jesus doesn't play a part in this book. I mean, they talk about the Bible and stuff, and they talk about God, but there's no Jesus story in this book. This is from another book. I'm all over the place with this book already. God Made You Special. What is this book about, and why do I find it so off-putting and weird? Well, we talk about the cubs' relationship with God, because the cubs know that God loves them. They know it because they get told by their parents. They know because the preacher tells them so. They know because the Bible tells them so. There's a whole song about it. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong. They are weak, but he is strong. Or they are weak, but he is strong. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. The Bible tells me so. And since Jesus is interchangeable with God in this belief system, Jesus, God, blah, blah, blah. And we get some pictures of them hugging their parents. We get some pictures of them talking with Preacher Brown preaching, which is weird because in the past it's been sort of a more Quakery church. Preacher Brown doesn't really preach so much as just sort of talk with everyone sort of shares stories. In any case, we see the brother and sister reading the Bible. They know about God's love in other ways. And we get this sort of like really kind of saccharine sweet portrayal of Bear Town or Bear Country. The sister absorbing the sun's rays and them walking in the woods and brother having butterflies land on his face and them petting a baby bunny and feeling its heartbeat and looking around the whole wide world. What about all those other people in the whole wide world? Does God love them too? That's the question. Again, not really a question that's relatable to the story we are going to get. The question is, I know God loves me. I'm seeing its proof everywhere, from people telling me directly to reading it in a book about God to just the sun on my face, the thumpity thump of a baby bunny's heartbeat. I know this is so, but does God love everyone else? Which is also a weird question to ask, in my humble opinion, because do you think you're the only person who can feel the sun on their face? In any case, that's not even the theme of this book. But they ask the question, does God love everybody else? Well, one day, Lizzie Bruin and Barry Bruin and their parents come over for a big backyard cookout, which is interesting because we see them pull up in a car. I remember when Mr. Bruin got his new car. It was in, I believe, the Green-Eyed Monster. Mr. Bruin gets his new car. Presumably, the Bruins have moved away. We saw in last week's book that the Bruins don't seem to live anywhere near the Bear family anymore. I guess they got a new car and they just took off because they've come driving up in their new car. Here they come. But there's another cub with them, a cub the Bear family's never met before. A little boy who looks to be about brother's age. He has a fuzzy head and a happy smile. And they wonder who he was. Now, the illustration that accompanies them wondering who this cub is the cub wearing a t-shirt that says Tommy on it. So I'm going to take a wild guess that this is Tommy. Is this Tommy? Let's find out. Also, can he hear us? Also, can he feel us near him? This is our nephew Tommy. This is what Mrs. Bruin is saying. It's our nephew Tommy. He's visiting us for a week. Hello there, Tommy. Welcome to our house. This is Mama Bear talking. Tommy comes across as shy. He just looks and smiles, which is okay. Totally cool. This is like Mitzi was a kid who needed a while to acclimate to a new situation. So this is nothing unusual in a child. He smiles. Mrs. Bruin then says, say hello to Mama Bear, Tommy. Tommy like pauses a little bit and then he says, hi, with a big grin. And it's like, fine, go play with the other cubs, Tommy. So Lizzie grabs Tommy's hand. They go running into the backyard. So what we've gotten so far, as Mr. Bruin goes off to work on the cookout with Papa, and Tommy goes running off with Lizzie, is that Tommy's a shy kid, I guess. Maybe it's what they're trying to say. That's really all we've gotten. Tommy's a shy kid with a big smile and a fuzzy head of hair, wears a shirt that says Tommy. That's all we know. So Mrs. Bruin then pulls Mama aside. So she took Mama to one side, which is strange. Because they are alone, she pulls Mama aside, wrings her hands. We see in the illustration she's wringing her hands, and she says, I should explain about Tommy. He may seem a little young for his age. He's very happy and friendly, and he's the same age as Brother and Barry, but he acts younger, more like Little Honey Bear. And Mama's like, I understand. He seems like a very sweet cub. We're very glad to meet him and have him here for our cookout. So There's nothing unusual about Tommy. He acts a little young for his age, which is something that, okay. I don't know why Mrs. Bruin feels the need to tell Mama this. If it's something she feels she should warn someone about, I guess, she should probably have mentioned it to the other cubs. Like, just so you know, I don't know, Tommy acts a little young. They're going to figure it out anyway. So bizarre. If it was like, just so you know, Tommy is extremely violent. He carries a knife with him. He will try to stab you. So just be ready. That I could understand. But also they probably should have taken the knife away from Tommy. But that's not the case. He's just, okay, so he's a little shy or something. So the Cubs go off to play baseball. They've started a game behind the house. Brother Lizzie and Honey are on one team. Barry's sister and Tommy are on the other. So here's the setup. So they're playing baseball. Barry is pitching. Sister is catching. Tommy is out in the field. So Lizzie Bruin hits the ball, and it flies out towards Tommy. Barry's like, grab the ball. Tommy doesn't grab the ball. He just watches it roll past him, and Barry's like, go get it. Tommy runs after the ball, picks it up. Lizzie runs around the bases to head to second. Tommy chases her. Barry's like, go, Tommy, go. Lizzie rounds second, but Tommy catches up with her and tags her out. Okay? So what's happened is Lizzie Bruin has hit the baseball. It's gone towards Tommy. He doesn't catch it, but when it hits the ground, he picks it up, runs after Lizzie, and tags her out. And then Barry says, you're out. Now, in my experience, this is called playing baseball. Like, this is how baseball is played. I don't know much about sports, but in my mind, Tommy has played a game of baseball. He's played baseball. He tagged out the other team. That's what you're supposed to do in baseball. You pick up the ball and you tag the person. So sister goes up to Barry and she's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, Barry, what's up with Tommy? Why did he let the ball go past him and then run with it instead of throwing it to second base? That's what he should have done. Now, I'm saying, well, there's only six Cubs out here. There's only six Cubs playing this game. There's only six Cubs. What's the team? So Barry, Sister, and Tommy are on one team. But Sister's playing the catcher. Barry is the pitcher. Therefore, it's probably easier in the first place for Tommy to catch the ball, grab the ball, and run with it. But what Barry says is, oh, Tommy has his own way of doing things. Again, he's playing baseball fairly correctly. Tommy has his own way of doing things. He's just a little different, that's all. Let's play ball. I mean, okay, sure. So far, nothing about Tommy has struck me as different or unusual. Like, he's just a Cub playing baseball who doesn't talk much, but that's fine. He doesn't know these kids. So the Cubs go on playing with the game, but they lose two of their players. Tommy sees a butterfly, and he goes to chase it. Honey thinks that that looks like more fun than playing baseball, and she goes to chase the butterfly as well. And Brother's like, what's up with this? And Lizzie's like, don't worry about it. We can play baseball without them. So they shrug, and they're like, all right, well, if Lizzie and Barry think it's okay to play without Honey and Tommy, I guess we'll just keep playing. So they do. They just keep playing baseball. And then Papa Bear's like, come eat. And so they go to eat hamburgers and hot dogs. Again, nothing unusual. One of the Cubs got bored playing baseball. He doesn't know these other kids. He goes to chase a butterfly. That's fine. The Cubs come running up to eat. But Sister's totally concerned about all this. So she's like, Mama, Tommy seems different. He doesn't act like our other friends. What's up with him? Why is he like that? Mama's like, well, we're all different from each other. We didn't all grow up and develop in the same way. You know that. And Sister's like, okay. But why is Tommy different? And she's like, and so Mama's answer to this is, because, sweetie, God made all of us special. He made Tommy special in his own way. God has a plan for us all. He loves you and me and Tommy very much. Okay, if we left it at... Okay, first of all, I want you to flash back to the book where Brother and Sister discover that Ferdy Factual is an atheist, that he doesn't believe in God, he doesn't believe in anything he can't test. They take this to Mama, and they're like, Mama, Ferdy doesn't believe in God. What do we do about this? To which Mama and Papa's response is, you don't do anything about this. You mind your own business. He's your friend and you love him. He just has his own way of interacting with the world. You love God. That's great. Ferdy doesn't believe in God. That's great. We're all getting along. We're all neighbors. We're all friends and we love each other. Mind your beeswax. This has nothing to do with you. Which is a great answer. I would have expected Mama to sort of deal with this in the same way. Like, why is Tommy different? Because he's different. We're all different. We deal with things differently. Don't worry about it. He's a good kid. Just hang out with him and play with him. That could have been the end of the discussion. Instead, Mama says God has a plan for us all, which is okay, fine. He loves you and me and Tommy very much. Again, could be the end of the discussion. Also, Mama has a giant bowl of mashed potatoes that look so incredible. I'm really hungry for mashed potatoes. I had fake chicken for lunch. I wish I'd had mashed potatoes to go with it. I didn't. I'm very upset about that. Then Mrs. Bruin comes along and ruins everything. Mrs. Bruin comes along and ruins everyone's day, life. I don't know, but we get possibly the worst two pages ever put into a Berenstain Bears book. Quite possibly the worst thing I've ever seen in a Berenstain Bears book. And I don't see a lot of bad things in Berenstain Bears books. I don't see a lot of things that I'm like, not only is this poorly thought out, it's actively harmful. Because as weird as it was when Brother taught Sister the way you deal with bullies is to learn to punch first and bloody their nose, that's not always the worst advice in the world. This, however, is like, if here's the worst thing I've ever read in a Berenstain Bears book, if that's at like an 8, then the absolute worst thing, this, is like at an 80. It's just, it's off the scale for harm and badness and bad thinking and bad thoughts. Here we go. Remember, also, this book was written in 2014. Here we go. So Sister thinks about God's love and about the specialness of everyone. Great. But, she says, and Mrs. Bruin jumps in and says, well, maybe God made Tommy so different so he could teach us something. If alarm bells aren't going off in your head right now, they should be. So maybe God made Tommy different from us so we can learn from him. And Sister's like, what? When you see Tommy playing, what do you see? This is Mrs. Bruin. And Tommy looks, you know, he's running and laughing with Honey Bear. And Sister's like, he looks happy. And Sister smiles when she says that. Yes, said Mrs. Bruin. This is me quoting directly. There is a special joy in Tommy, a special kind of happiness. Maybe God wants us to see that joy and be joyful too, just like Tommy. Sister watches Tommy playing with Honey, and they're having a good time. Sister laughs and runs after them. Tommy screams and shouts and runs away from her. I mean, joyfully. Sister, brother, and Barry notice and join in. Pretty soon, they're all running around and around, laughing and shouting. Then they fall down on the grass together in a heap. They're having a good time. Then it's time for dinner. They all sit around and say, "Grace." And Mr. Bruin says, "Lord, thank you for the food we're about to eat. Thank you for your sending our wonderful friend Tommy, who gives us so much joy, to visit this week. In your words, whoever welcomes this little child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Amen." They say amen. Tommy says, "Yum." They all say, "Yum." And they tuck in together. The end. Why is this the worst Berenstain Bears book I've ever read? Why does this book rub me the wrong way so much? What is it that I can't stand about the Berenstain Bears, God Made You Special? And what does that have to do with my job as a writer who writes about disability? And what do the experts have to say? Let's find out. So I'm using a few sources for this discussion. I'm using the Special Olympics Guidelines on Inclusive Language, which emphasizes people-first language and avoiding and how to avoid demeaning stereotypes. I'm using Disability Rights UK's analysis of inspiration porn, which explores how disabled people are often used as motivational tools for non-disabled people. And I'm using Chapter 3 of Ashley Shue's Against Techno-Ableism. Thank you to Alana for recommending this book to me, and this chapter specifically, which identifies common disability tropes in media and their impact on societal attitudes. So I'll include links for all these in the description in case you want to take a look at them yourself. There's a bunch of other things I read as well, but these were the three that really stood out to me, and I really want to thank Alana for recommending Ashley Shue's Against Techno-Ableism. It's a fascinating book. I've really focused on the third chapter here. I haven't been able to read the whole thing, but I read the third chapter. Got a lot of notes from there. So, the Berenstain Bears haven't dealt with disability a whole lot. As I said up top, they've dealt with disability a few times, and each time have brought something new to the table. This is the first book that deals with disability while also avoiding it altogether. It sort of makes Tommy a Hollywood disabled person, which means we're not going to name specifically what's going on with him. We're gonna say he's a little different. We're gonna say he acts a little different. You may notice him being a little different, but we're not gonna give him a label. Now, in some schools of thought, people would say that's to avoid labeling him. But in many schools of thought, that's to say that's to avoid being checked. That's to avoid us having to like actually adhere to any guidelines or any specifics or any real tropes, because then we can just say we never said he was X, Y, or Z. This is the young Sheldon school of disability approach. This is the Abed school of disability approach, where there's something going on, but we're never going to say what it is. That way we never have to adhere to any standards. So, in fact, that's actually lampshaded in a few episodes of Community, in case you're wondering where I got the name Abed from. So, God Made You Special. We meet this little boy, Tommy. And he gets, I believe, in the whole book, all of two lines. He never says anything about himself. We never learn anything about him beyond the fact that he's kind of like a kid or something. He may be shy. He may be different in some way. But we know that he's disabled because he has the mentality of a four-year-old, I guess, is what we're told about him. He's more like Honey. He's brother's age, but he's developmentally more like Honey. We don't know why. So the book kind of describes Tommy as as young for his age and different. It doesn't affirm his identity at all. It doesn't use what is referred to in the Special Olympics guidelines as people first language, where Tommy is Tommy. He is a young boy. He is a character. He is a member of their community, a member of their family. Instead, he's just this kid who's young for his age, whatever that means. It doesn't say, again, whether or not he has an intellectual disability, but it frames his differences as sort of this ambiguous, infantilized character. It infantilizes him by making him literally like an infant, like Honey Bear. It's like, we're not going to get into specifics, just tell you that he's going to act like a little, he's going to act like a baby, I guess. It doesn't give him any lines. This is not Tommy talking about himself. We're not getting to know Tommy. He is someone that we observe from afar, comment on to each other, and then either choose to interact with or not interact with, based on what other people say. We could have said, the book could have told us that Tommy has an intellectual disability, instead of saying, Tommy's different. Because as Mama says, everyone's different. When Sister Bear asks, why is Tommy so different? And Mama just is like, we're all different. Literally what Sister Bear is asking is, I sense there is something about this child because of the way you're acting. What's the deal? Mama could have said, I'm sorry if I acted weird, or I'm sorry if I acted differently around Tommy. He has an intellectual disability, and I did not know that, so Mrs. Bruin kind of filled me in. And here's, you know, he has this, or this, you know, because of his disability. He may not understand rules so fast or something, I don't know, but no one ever clarifies. Ashley Hsu and Disability Rights UK both talk about the problem of inspiration porn, which is, inspiration porn is using another person's disability or circumstance to inspire others, to say, like, this happened so that we can learn a lesson, or this happened so that we can learn that life's not always bad, or you can overcome anything, or, you know, anyone can accomplish anything. Look at this person with a disability. So the story presents Tommy's presence, like his existence, as a lesson for other cubs about joy and about God's love, which reinforces the inspiration porn trope. Mrs. Bruin specifically says, Tommy was put here for a reason, to teach us about joy. Look at how joyful he always is. So Stella Young, writing for Disability Rights UK, and Ashley Hsu, writing for Against Technoableism, talk about how inspiration porn reduces disabled individuals to objects of inspiration rather than full people with their own agency. So Tommy is never represented as a kid with a personality. We don't get to see his personality other than he chases butterflies and he can't pay attention to baseball, which could be me as well, because we're only shown two things and we only get to see what he doesn't do. But also, Tommy, as I said up top, plays baseball. He plays baseball as well as anyone else. He tags Lizzie Bruin out. He just loses interest in it because, I hate to be the person to tell everybody this, it's a boring sport. But in any case, that's not the point of the book. But we don't see Tommy participating in the group. We don't see Tommy having his own interests, his own goals, his own desires. Instead, we focus on how the non-disabled characters, brother and sister, Lizzie and Barry, but specifically brother and sister, how they interact with him. The only non-judgmental person in the story seems to be Honey Bear, which is unfortunate because she's a toddler, which puts Tommy and Honey, again, on the same level. And even if Tommy isn't developmentally as advanced as brother, even if Tommy is as developmentally on the same developmental level as Honey Bear, he is still a 10-year-old child. He is still a child like brother, with his own drives, his own physical development, his own hormonal development and emotional development. He is not a toddler. He is a boy, brother's age, who likes to play sports, likes to run around, likes to roll on the ground, likes to hang out with kids. We don't, again, know much else about him because Tommy only says two things, hi and yum, in the whole story. Ashley Hsu in Against Techno-Ableism talks about the shameful sinner trope, which you might think this book doesn't quite fall into the trap of portraying, but Hsu says that the shameful sinner is a long-running trope that frames disability as a punishment or a penance for some kind of sinful action, either the mother's or the disabled person's. That's how it's usually framed. It also emerges in the idea that a disability is a challenge intended to transform and humanize the people around the disabled person. This is especially visible in stories about the parents of disabled children, which almost always follow the, we thought having a disabled child would be a tragedy, but surprise, we found that we actually love our child, aren't we the angels, narrative, in which the child is an occasion for the parents to redeem themselves morally. So it's not just that we're seeing disability as a punishment for the person who has the disability. What we're seeing is Tommy's disability as an opportunity to redeem the other people in the story. And it's not even a trope. It is specifically the end plot, because Mrs. Bruin says Tommy's disability, which is never named, is given to him by God to teach us about joy, I guess, to teach us a lesson. She says it's there to teach us a lesson. This trope, the inspirational, you know, the shameful sinner, this person has been sent among us to teach us to be better people, has been used historically to justify excluding people with disabilities, to pity people with disabilities, and to resist real inclusion efforts. Because if a person's purpose is to be apart from the mainstream and to teach us how to live, you can never adopt them into the mainstream. They have to remain apart from us, because if they're not, then they're not doing their job here on earth, which is to teach us sinners to be better people. So instead of spiritualizing disability, it's just part of who we are. It's who we are. It's who we are. It's who we are. We are a community of people of different abilities. We are a community of people with disabilities. And again, disability is framed as someone who is incapable of doing the things that we have deemed appropriate for human beings to be able to do. Because X thousand years ago, somebody realized that it's easier to get from point A to point B slightly higher up by building a set of stairs. We all decided anyone who can't get up the stairs then is disabled, is incapable, is a problem. And woof, what are we going to do about this? Not our problem. Even though stairs don't exist that way. Like, there's something we made up. And when we decided everyone should be able to do it, see, also reading. Our brains aren't designed for that. Most of our brains can do it. Many of our brains can do it, I should say. Not everyone's brains can do it. And yet that's a disability, because we decided that the written word is how we're going to convey most information. In any case, off my soapbox. Infantilization and the lack of agency. So Tommy is rarely given a voice. Tommy is given two lines. Tommy never gets to talk about himself. He never gets to talk about his own experiences. The book is, instead, he's just somebody we need to figure out. He's somebody to understand. He's not a character. He is an object of interest. He is an object. He's an obstacle at times. He is something to observe and then turn to the person next to us and say, what's up with that guy? What's up with that kid? And then you have the person next to us say, well, here's what's going on about that kid. Instead of, I don't know, one of them going up to Tommy and saying, why didn't you catch the ball? And maybe asking Tommy if maybe he didn't see the ball, or maybe he's not good at catching, or he doesn't want to play baseball, or maybe just ignore it because who cares? I don't catch a baseball. I don't want that coming at me, but that's not the point, I know. We never hear Tommy's thoughts. Brother and sister talk incessantly. Tommy is the same age as brother, and yet we never get his side of the story. He never gets any moments where he can express his own thoughts and where he gets to make his own choices. In fact, when he does make choices, like chasing the butterfly, it's portrayed as an aberration, something weird, that everyone chooses to ignore. Lizzie's like, ah, forget about him. It's okay if we don't play with him. And okay. So in Shu's critique of the overcoming trope, let me pull that up. The inspirational overcomer is probably the most common one in the media. It's the one that seems least awful, but it's really not. This is where inspiration porn comes from. The trope implies that to be good disabled people, we have to be constantly fighting against our bodies or minds in some way. This is me quoting Ashley Hsu. We must disown our collective or community identities in order to be individuals. Inspiration porn makes disabled people into objects to inspire others. We must make ourselves into spectacles whose purpose is to motivate non-disabled people or make them feel good. Other disability tropes are used to motivate shame, create pity, justify policing, and more. Inspirational overcomers trope, which usually features white disabled people, intensifies the effects of those other tropes, becoming part of our social scripts. And then they tie it into white privilege, how that pervades disability narrative, and even white disabled critiques of inspiration porn, which she acknowledges she makes in this book, are made possible by white privilege. So she quotes Velissa Thompson, who points out, I ardently despise inspiration porn, but as an advocate who focuses on the achievements and experiences of disabled Black girls and women and other disabled girls and women of color, I do not have the luxury of picking and choosing stories that depict us in a positive, non-inspirational light. Why? Because our stories do not get the same or fair amount of spotlight and recognition as the ones that feature white disabled people. Now, of course, the Berenstain Bears aren't quote-unquote white, but they are the dominant culture, which makes them essentially culturally, pop culturally white, because they are the dominant culture that you see the same skin tone of everywhere. Now, this book, Against Techno-ableism, is very much about techno-ableism, how technology is ableist in general. But I loved this chapter just for it pointing out these common tropes in the way we tell the stories, disability stories. It's something I've had to work against my whole career, because in sharing the stories of people with disabilities, specifically brain injury and stroke, the temptation is to frame it as, look how awesome they are for overcoming this. And many times that's the story they personally want to tell. They want to show how far they've come. They want to say, like, I thought I couldn't do this and then I did it. That's the story they want to tell. And so my job is always to share their story using as much of their own words as possible, using as much of their own face as possible now with video, and standing aside and letting them tell the story they want to tell. And if they want to talk about how awesome it is, that's great. It's their story. It's the message they want to give out. 999 times out of 100, it's just to say, you're not alone, is what our thing is you're not, you know, you have, if you have a brain injury, you are not, it's not unusual for you to be experiencing things. There are other people who experience things. You're not alone. You can talk about this publicly, and your story is worth telling, and you are a person who belongs in the community. Like, everyone belongs in their community. And the one thing I always talk about is what one of our board members told me when I first started out on this job, which was the goal is in disability advocacy is to change the world, because you can't change a disability. You can't change a disability. You just can't. You have a disability. If it's forever, then it's forever. That's not going away. But you can change the world around the disability. You can, you know, it could be something as concrete as ramps or elevators or, you know, all access bathrooms. But it can also be something like this book is talking about, against techno-ableism, which is changing the societal script, getting rid of disability tropes, or changing the disability tropes, or acknowledging the disability tropes, so that the script that we learn to follow as people, as community members, as neighbors, does away with this objectifying and relying on people as objects of inspiration. So the book, in no way talks about any barriers to inclusion or ways to support Tommy's participation in the sport. It just shows that the Cubs accept, oh, well, I guess he's not going to play with us. And then they just go and do their own thing. They never are like, well, if Tommy wants to do something different, let's do what Tommy's doing. Let's join Tommy. Maybe the Cubs could have been like, Tommy's chasing butterflies. We all like chasing butterflies. Let's all go do that. Let's play the way Tommy plays. He doesn't have to play the way we play. He played baseball as long as he was interested in it. Now he wants to go chase butterflies. Let's go chase butterflies. Tommy, can we join? Yeah, come on. I like to chase butterflies. Great, go chase butterflies. Instead, we see him run off and everyone would be like, that cool? Is it cool if we just ignore him? Okay. Which is 900 times out of 1,000 what happens is the kids with the disabilities just get ignored because they can't participate or they don't want to participate. It's too much of an effort. There's too many barriers to them participating. We're going to play all 9 innings, Tommy. Well, I can't focus for 9 innings. So I guess after 2, I'm just going to go off and do something else because they're dead. Oh, when Tommy plays, let's do 2-inning turnaround games. And then we'll do something else. Why? Because Tommy's a kid who we like and he's a nice kid and we want to make sure that everyone's having a good time. Barriers to inclusion. It's that whole like equality versus equity cartoon. Equality is like, of course Tommy can play with us. Here's what we're doing. Well, he has to work extra hard just to play 1 inning of baseball, so it's not really equitable, is it? Well, equity would be, let's work things out so that we're all having a good time. In any case, disability inclusion is not about passive acceptance. It requires active accessibility effort. So what this book could have done is identify what Tommy needs to feel included and then acting on those. It's the Mike Berenstain thing. Love and acceptance, community and neighborliness are not about just appreciating that someone's there. It's about actively taking steps to ensure their inclusion. Tommy could have been included in any number of ways. The first one, by asking him, what do you want to do? The baseball game could have included accommodations for Tommy to participate, or they could have just gone off with Tommy and chased butterflies. They could have also talked about the things that he liked to do. Give him a voice. Give him thoughts. Give him agency. Don't just make him a learning tool for brother and sister bear. Excuse me. The lesson ends up being, let's look at Tommy and learn about joy. But you can just participate in friendship. You don't have to look at someone and be like, that's a lesson. I'm going to learn from that. He's teaching me that joy is okay. Because Tommy's not a joy machine. Tommy is a kid who probably has hurts and feelings and breaks down sometimes and isn't always happy. Kids with disabilities, people with disabilities, are not sources of joy any more than any other human is. Everyone's capable of being a source of joy, but we're also capable of being sources of sadness and pain. We cry, we get hurt, we want to get hugged sometimes. We have emotional breakdowns, we get overwhelmed. It's just part of life. And to say this child is an inspirational joy source is gross and weird. Instead, you can be like, well, Tommy likes to have fun too. We all like to have fun. Let's go have fun with Tommy. Let's go play with Tommy. He's a little different, I guess, in that he doesn't like baseball. Maybe he has a developmental disability. Sure, okay, fine. We've never encountered this before, but great. He's also a kid who we can play with. Let's ask him what he wants to do. Go ask Tommy what he wants to do. Well, that makes me uncomfortable. Well, fine. Let's get over it and go ask Tommy what he wants to do. There's so many ways this book could have gone. Don't teach it that God made us all different to teach us a lesson. Don't teach that. Just acknowledge that everyone's different. Mama says it. God made all of us different, and that's wonderful. So I pull out that quote from Psalms up top. Let me pull it up again. Because if you need to have a religious message, it's a pretty good psalm. Now, it's not all encompassing. Oh wait, I think I have it here. It's not all encompassing. But it's, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. This is a psalm to God. And this is, I think the whole body of the psalm, the psalmist is like, I can't hide anywhere from you. You see everything. You make everything. You do everything. But the psalmist says in this little part, if you need to take it out of context, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And what this is saying right here out of context is, I love God because you made me and you made me perfect, because you only make perfect things. You only make wonderful things. So of course I'm wonderful. To me, that's a good message to dwell on. And because Mama Bear basically says that God made all of us different. If you believe in God, which I don't, but if this is a book you're looking at, if you're trying to teach your kids things, God made everyone different. He made everybody different. And that's fine. That's good. That's great. Great. We're all different. Great. Leave it at that. We're all different. Unfortunately, the world exists in a way that makes it very difficult for some of those people to be different in their way. And it is the job of the people who control things, who run things, who make decisions about things, to make the world not that difficult for people. It's not that hard to build ramps.
Oh, but it costs a lot of money.
Yes, because you built these giant sets of stairs. I know it's going to cost money to get rid of that giant set of stairs, but you know what? Get rid of it. Put in some zigzag ramps. Everybody can go upstairs or up ramps. It's not their fault that we decided. Never mind. This is my stairs yelling that I do. I do yelling about stairs. I mean, they fit. Yes, stairwells fit very nicely in the buildings that we've designed, but we designed them around those stairs. If we had designed them around like ramps, a whole other world. Shallow ramps. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That's a great sentiment. We're all made. We're all made. And we're all made. It's the world we built around us that doesn't work. So frustrated. Got some questions to talk about too. I'm not done yet. Not done yet. Does this book use inclusive language? These are some questions you can ask yourself about a book to determine how they represent disability. Does this book use inclusive language to describe Tommy's disability? No, of course not. It just says he's different and that he's like a child at heart. He has a young soul. And it doesn't use the Special Olympics guidelines well at all to talk about intellectual disabilities. It thoroughly others Tommy. It sets him apart. It others him, does not do a good job at talking about Tommy's disability, or I should say talking with Tommy about his disability. In what ways does the book use Tommy as a lesson for others? Well, it has that whole ending. Here's a good question. How might a child with a disability feel after reading this book? I don't know. I don't have a small child with a disability. So I'm going to put it to you, the listeners. How do you think a child might feel after reading this book? Especially the part with Mrs. Bruin. Focus really on that part with Mrs. Bruin, saying that God made Tommy different so that we can learn a lesson from him, so that we can learn how to be joyful like him, because he doesn't know any better, I guess. Yes, there are some kids with developmental disabilities who are far more affectionate and far more like open to friendliness as a result of that disability. That also, by the way, puts them in danger. That's the other thing. If they don't have that filter, if they don't have that ability to, you know, stop and determine who is worthy of their affection. Remember, what people with disabilities are way more the victims of abuse and assault and everything that the world can throw at them than people without disabilities. So remember that when you're like, that kid's just happy all the time and a source of joy to everyone. That kid's not there to be your source of joy. The kid is there to live their life to the fullest. Let them live their life to the fullest. Also support initiatives to make everything more accessible to everyone. What are the dangers of framing someone as given to God to teach others a lesson. I think we talked about that. How can you reframe it to promote inclusion without using religious justifications? You can leave out all that part. You can quote the psalm and you can just say, hey, let's go play with Tommy. So what steps can we have taken? Well, what could the Bear family have done? How can we have rethought this whole thing if Tommy was going to be included? When Tommy goes off to chase a butterfly, have everyone just join in. Hey, let's go play with, just go place chase a butterfly now. Tommy, do you want us to join you? Can we join you? Can we play your game? Yeah, let's play chase the butterfly. Great, let's play chase the butterfly. Ah, but sometimes you just want to play baseball. Well, tough. Sometimes you don't always play baseball. Sometimes you play what other kids want to play. That's a lesson to learn as well. Hey, let's learn that lesson. You don't always get what you want, kids. How could this book have been written to empower Tommy? Yes. Yes, Tommy could have had a voice. Tommy could have been asked what he wanted to do. We could have actually talked about disability rather than just differences. You don't learn anything by shying away from language that includes disability discussion. We didn't when Harry, is that his name? The kid in Wheelchair Commando. He talks about his disability all the time. He has to. It's very out there, invisible. And this is what I do. He plays wheelchair basketball. He cleans up the floor with his wheelchair. He's also a smarty pants, and he can be a little unpleasant to be around sometimes. And I always liked that the Berenstains were like, yeah, we'll ride a kid in a wheelchair. He's going to be a little bit of a jerk sometimes, because you know what? Kids can be jerks. Doesn't matter if you have a disability. You can be a jerk. It's okay. So I wouldn't even say this book is a good starting point. Honestly, I think it infantilizes Tommy. I think it uses inspiration porn, and that the religious framing is super destructive. At the end, I think that it's not good. I think it ignores the fact that Tommy has really great ideas on how to play. What if in the baseball game they had been like, okay, then we won't throw the ball. Let's play it Tommy's way. Let's play the Tommy baseball. Let's play Tommy's way of playing baseball. We won't catch and throw the ball. We'll pick it up off the ground every time and run with it. That's a new way of playing baseball. That's how we're going to play baseball now. We're all capable of doing it, and we all like to do it. It's fun. It's a new way of doing it. It's a new challenge. If Barry is aware that that's how Tommy plays baseball, why wouldn't Barry just be like, this is how we play it sometimes? Sometimes let's change the game up a little bit so that everyone can play in the way that works best for everyone. Equity. Tommy goes and chases the butterfly. Let's take a break and let's do something else. Let's go play chase the butterfly. Great. We'll blow dandelions and chase butterflies. And it's fun because Tommy's fun. Tommy's a great kid with great ideas. When you're talking about God making everyone special, yeah, he gives everyone gifts. One of the advocates I talked to for brain injury said that it's not just about everyone being different. Everyone has something to contribute, a different perspective on life. One of the reasons you should hire people with disabilities isn't just to be like, I hire people with disabilities, but because people with disabilities have different experiences, and having different experiences and different viewpoints is vital to running anything. It's creative. It teaches you to see the world in a different way. And I'm not saying, well, I'm not saying they're there to teach us a lesson. I'm saying their input, people with disabilities, is just as vital, because if you don't ever have anybody with disabilities, you get totally stuck. The world is not this one way. The world is an infinite number of ways. And you got to see things different ways. So God made out, if you believe in God and you believe he made us special, well, great. We all have different things we can do, different things with different ways we learn, different ways we play. So let's just celebrate everybody. Let's celebrate the way God made all of us and find new ways to play together as friends. Because we all have the ability to love each other. We all have the ability to work together. And when we do that, we experience this love that we're talking about in the book more clearly. Like, it, then it's everywhere. Then it's that active thing that Mike likes us to do. We all learn from each other. Specific groups of people were not set on earth to teach us lessons. If we're opening our eyes and accepting each other as equal members of the community, then we are constantly learning from each other, not just people with disabilities. If we want to talk about inspiration porn, then let's be each other's inspiration porn. Let's inspire each other simply by paying attention to what each other is doing and learning from that. Huh? Yes? Well, if we're all different, if we all have different ways of doing things, let's learn joy from each other and sadness and coping and support. Let's run around and roll on the grass with each other. It's fun. We can learn from each other not because we're different, but because we're friends, but because we're community members, but because we're all human beings on the earth. And friends, make everything better. They make everything better. God made you special? He did. He made everybody special. And that's great. Great. If you believe that, that's great. Act on that. Have Tommy talk. Have him participate naturally without him being set aside from each other. All people. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That's all people. All people. If we're all made in God's image, which again, I don't believe, but if we all are, then everybody is, and then everybody has the same thing to contribute. Friends make games, learning, and life more fun. People are not a challenge to be understood. Friendship and family and community is about finding joy in everyone and making sure everyone's included. I don't know. I have a lot of problems with this book, as you can tell. I can't in good faith recommend it, but I can in good faith recommend it as a book for groups who are looking for examples of this kind of book. Books that try their darndest, but miss the mark. I think this book misses the mark. This gets 10 finger wags from Phil out of 100, out of 10. 10 finger wags from Phil. That's it. I've been avoiding this book for so long. It makes me so viciously uncomfortable. Special. Special was used as an insult when I was in high school. Like, that word had been... Yes, the Special Olympics still exists. And one of the reasons I chose their guidelines is because they know. They're like, we know, we're the Special Olympics. Please don't refer to people as special. Be very careful, they say in their guidelines. Be very careful using that word. They're the Special Olympics because that's branding. They're not changing it. That's like the NAACP. They're not changing that now. It's hard. It's hard to walk back away from, like, language that's changed. But yeah, God made you special. Oh boy. It's a minefield. It's a minefield. Let's talk about it down in the comments. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for suffering through this with me. Not because the conversation's something to suffer through, but because you have to listen to me talk about it. Do we want to talk about it more? Let me know. Do you have you in the comments? If you have resources you like, leave those. I'd love to hear them. Other videos that discuss this, videos you've made that discuss this. What children's books do you think deal with disability in a really good way? I'd like to hear them. And I'm talking like picture books, like this level, this age level. What books do you think deal with religion and disability in a really constructive way? Let me hear about those too. We don't exist in a vacuum. People have all faiths, all backgrounds, all different approaches. Cultures are different. People from different cultures have different ways of approaching disability. Some of it positively, some of it negatively. So let me hear about that. It's a big, wide, wonderful world out there, and we're all a part of it. So talk to me. Talk to me in the comments. Hey, if you've stuck with me this long, subscribe. And I'll see you all next time, deep in Bear Country.